Okay, so we're going to get into our finance slot for today, the ray of sunshine. Are you still a ray of sunshine?
Absolutely fully charged. Eskom still wanting to buy my energy, but I'm not prepared to let them pay me over 4 months.
Well,
Definitely not. I want COD.
welcome, Brian Hirsch.
Thank you.
Great to have you in the studio this morning. So, Brian, today we are talking about issues that affect multiple generations. It's an intergenerational dialogue that we're having today, right?
Yeah, so very, very difficult, you know, if you think about parents and children and and parents' children and their children. You know, we talk about this generation gap, who's supporting? I mean, if you think about it, you know, 50 years ago, parents could expect support from children. Today, children are struggling themselves to make ends meet. They've got children who are now studying. You know, if you think about it, many years ago, at age 18, you went out to work. Now, age 18, we hope our children go and study and then start to develop their own lives. And this generation gap, the difficulty for children to support their parents and then also support their own children. And then you've got the sandwich gap where you've got grandchildren who are now also trying to support parents and grandparents. And you know, no one ever expected people to live as long as they are. So with inflation and money, you know, the value of money reducing all the time because of this high inflation level, people are struggling and pensions aren't keeping up. People who'd saved thinking they're going to live 5 or 10 years after retirement are now living so many more years, and it's just such a difficult situation. And are so many what we call the sandwich gap, the children who are supporting both parents and their children are really struggling. You know, we're struggling anyway just to support ourselves and all those things. So all you can do is, you know, you give your child an education, you hope they'll go out. You've got to sometimes tough love. You know, you've got to make sure. You know, you've also got to, as a in the middle gap, the sandwich, you being the parent, have to also realize that you've also got to put money away as you're going to end up into that same trap.
So, Brian, just so that we're all on the same page, right? I want us to go back just to perhaps starting it off with this, with the definition of this sandwiched generation. And my understanding of it is that you have what are largely middle-aged people that are sandwiched between the responsibility of their parents and their children. Is
Yeah,
that correct?
that's absolutely correct. I mean, you know, they are stuck in the middle between the elderly parents and not yet independent children. They've reached an age where they envisaged enjoying the golden years as a couple. Instead, they find themselves burdened with the task of caring for aged parents and simultaneously supporting grown children not yet able to support themselves. Their responsibility takes the emotional and financial toll and can have a huge drain on the resources of a middle-aged couple. The situation is becoming the norm in our modern world. Even people who endeavor to make proper provisions for their retirement find their pensions now inadequate due to the effects of inflation. And to compound this, medical science has increased life expectancy, but at a price. Healthcare costs are spiraling for everyone, but the aged are possibly most affected. These days, it seems that even older people are having triple bypasses and chemotherapy. It's quite amazing, the right to live. So these are all costs that medical aids don't take into it. Maybe, you know, people haven't made provision. You know, as you get older, the cost of medical aid is the one constant that's going to affect your budget. You can control everything else, maybe not comfortably, but you can control what food you eat. You can control what transport. You can control entertainment. You can't control medical costs. And if you're in a medical aid, I've always said, whatever you're paying to a medical aid today is going to cost you double in 8, 9 years' time at an inflation rate of between 8 and 9%. Think about it. If you're paying 8,000 rand to medical aid and you're 62, at age 70, you're going to be paying 16,000. And if you want to keep that medical aid at age 78, you're going to be paying I know it sounds ridiculous, 32,000 rand.
Yeah.
And our pensions aren't increasing like that, because when you get to retirement, you've no more earning capacity. And so that medical aid is critical, and what's got to be done. That's why NHI, when it eventually comes in the correct form, the problem with NHI is there's just so many problems and so many things that still have to be dealt with. But when it eventually comes in, some form of benefits, I can't understand why the medical schemes haven't yet allowed low medical aid schemes. They've still been dilly-dallying all this time.
All right.
But that's an enormous cost that people need to consider. And so this middle age gap, this generation, the sandwich gap, needs to understand that you've got to make provisions not only for yourselves, but for a longer period for your children, and then also for parents who, if not both living that much longer, one's likely to live that much longer. And, you know, they pay the same for a loaf of bread, whether you're working or not. And pint of milk, exactly the same.
I'm interested to know from our listeners, how much of this conversation resonates with you? Are you part of the sandwich generation? Are you one of those individuals that is living with the increasing burden, and pressure, really, of having to care for children that you thought would be out of your care by now? This would be maybe, from kids that are 18 years and older. And also then the burden of having to care for your parents that are also dealing with the difficulties, as Brian is saying, of the increasing cost of living. And what impact is it having on your finances? And in a moment then, Brian and I will talk about what it is that the groups of this generation, what can the sandwich generation begin to do to be able to better deal with all of these pressures that are falling on it. We'll continue the conversation after.
Talking Finance with Brian Hirsch, making sense of your finance.
All right, we continue the conversation with Brian. So, Brian, what is it that the sandwich generation can do to deal with all of these increasing pressures? As you've said, these are people who are at a point in their lives where they would have thought that the responsibility that they have would be much less than it currently is. And I would imagine that then financially it means that many would not have been prepared for the situation we're in now.
Yes, for two reasons. One being inflation. And the second is that many families are having children at a much older age, which means when you thought that your children were off your hands in the early 50s, children are still on your hands at the 60s. And when you reach retirement, the three components you need to have in retirement is firstly, have a home paid off, you need to have a good healthcare program, and you need to have no debt. And that's not what's happening. So what's happening at retirement, all three things are still continuing. You've got debt, you haven't got your home paid for, and the medical costs are exorbitant. So parents, all they can do is educate their children and let their children get on with their lives. But that's another problem, because it isn't that easy to find a job at the moment. Look at our employment rate, close to 32%. And particularly if you look at the younger group, it's even more than that. So, I mean, government have a responsibility and business has a responsibility to work together and to try and create jobs. And with this, as you're hearing with the political, the different parties' manifestos, they're going to create jobs. Where are they going to create jobs from all of a sudden? If they couldn't do it before, how are you going to do it? And then with your parents, you've got to be looking very carefully at, and sometimes, you know, you've got to have a look at what you are giving your parents. And so often, you know, one mother can bring up four children. But four children can't look after one mother. And you've got the different siblings, one can, one can't. It's a joint responsibility that children have to get together with and say, how are we going to support our parents? You all have to contribute. You can't just leave it to me. But then we know the unemployment situation. So in South Africa, it's a real issue with this unemployment. And that's why it's so important that we grow our economy and a lot of the money we collect. I mean, we did have a good collection in terms of the last information given to us regarding taxes collected. I think we collected 10 billion in excess of what we were expecting. But we need to make sure that the environment is right. So we put that to use. I mean, only 30% of our 2.3 trillion budget for the year is going to improve our economy. That's less than 700 billion. 1.6 billion is going on grants, on debt, and on paying off all the other issues we do, which we don't get any return on.
Brian, it can sometimes feel, especially when we're going through these challenges as a society, that we are the only ones that are facing this dynamic. But even just this idea of a sandwich generation, it's not something that's unique to South Africa. It's a problem that the rest of the world is facing too.
Yeah, look, exactly. But let me say this to you. Mm. We've got a lot of people, particularly in other parts of the world, who are what we call asset rich, income poor. They've got an asset, they've got a home, and that home isn't producing any income. So they've got that asset. And in other parts of the world, you're able to use that asset to raise monies to live on. And you have life rights to your own property, subject to the conditions that you maintain the property and you keep the property insured. And here in South Africa, because interest rates are high, you can't do that. But in some cases, you've got to force your parents to actually sell their home if there's an asset there, and find a way, do the budgets and calculate what needs to be done. As much as your parents have lived there for so many, many years, you may find that that asset needs to be sold, and parents need to be put into rental accommodation to take the burden off this sandwich generation.
Mm. What are some of the things, Brian, that you are having to advise your clients around this issue? So when somebody comes to you and says, I can't breathe, and I need help in restructuring my finances, what's the first point of call for somebody who's part of the sandwich generation?
Well, the first thing is, what are you paying to debt? What are you paying for bonds on your home? What are you paying for driving a motor car? What size car do you drive? What other debt have you got? And try to consolidate that debt within the lower. There's expensive debt, and there's, you know, unsecured debt is expensive. Secured debt is much cheaper. A bond debt is the cheapest. However, it's long term. But if you can use your bond to finance your debt for the next 3 to 4 years, in other words, you're not actually taking up your debt on your bond for the full term, but only for the next 3 to 4 years, you can bring down costs. And then looking at someone's budget very carefully and very, very objectively, and saying, you know, you're telling me I've got 2,000 rand for entertainment. I'm saying you don't have 2,000 rand for entertainment. You only have 1,200 or 11 or 500, whatever the case may be. Bringing your budget within line, and in your budget, you need to say, is there part of your budget supporting children and parents? You need to do that. It all comes back, Kathy. You ask me that nearly every week. What can people who are struggling do? And all I'm saying is, the starting point is re-looking at your budget and taking a very hard view on that budget.
We'll continue the conversation with Brian Hirsch. And yeah, sometimes easier said than done, because we also don't want to part with some of the luxuries that, you know, we've become accustomed to. So if I have to now go and trade in my car, I'm thinking twice. Maybe, you know, that it's not what I want to do. And so it's also about that follow through, right? What are some of the difficult decisions that you're struggling with making, but that you know you need to make in order to get your budget in line? As Brian is saying, what are those things that you're struggling with? Give us a call so that you can talk to Brian and he can help you think through it and really manage the process, because the sooner you act, the better it's going to be for you and your family. All right, it's time for me to take the latest news headlines. We'll continue with this conversation, and I'll be taking your calls on the other side of this.
Talking Finance with Brian Hirsch, making sense of your finance.
So we continue the conversation with Brian Hirsch. In a moment, I'll be taking your calls on 086-000-2032. How are you getting by as the sandwich generation? What are the decisions that you are making about your budget in order to make it through every month financially. I'll take some of your WhatsApp voice notes on 0614-104-107. Brian?
Kathy, just one comment. I used my credit card. I had to go to Durban for a funeral of a 42-year-old yesterday, the daughter of a client of mine. Very, very sad. And to the family, they know who they are. My condolences. But, you know, every time you tap a credit card, it says straight or budget.
Yes.
That budget, using that budget is the most dangerous debt trap. Because that budget means you're going to pay it off. And if you don't pay your credit card in full every month, you're paying interest at 20 to 22%. That's enormous. If you consider your bond is at 11.75%, that's the prime rate. Your repo rate is 8.25%. You're paying on a budget 20 to 22%. And if you don't pay it in full, it's accumulating. So that is the most dangerous thing. Try not to touch that budget button. Mm-hmm. Go for straight payment. And then at the end of the month, one of the biggest things people are using, because less and less people are taking cash these days. They want credit cards. I mean, you fly in an aircraft now, you want to buy a sandwich. They've said, no more cash. You've got to use a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Stop using that budget, because what you're really doing is you're kicking the can down the road. You're going to have to pay that back. And it's so easy to get caught into that trap.
All right. Thanks for that advice, Brian. I've got a message here from Anonymous. It's unsigned, who says, I've been part of the sandwich generation since 2019. I was employed paying my way, but after COVID-19, I've been struggling to find work, any kind of work. My mother helps me out with some money, but it's hard. Worst thing is, both my parents are set to retire next year, and my sister is about to graduate. I'm worried that if I can't find work soon, then things will get worse at home. I'm 30 now, and it's hard, really hard. How does a person go on living like this?
Yes, and your parents would have made provisions all their life for this retirement and what they're going to do in retirement. And as I've said, hopefully they've got no debt, they've got a home paid for, they've got a good healthcare program. But here you've got a situation where your parents are forced. And it's all about the economy. And, you know, we're hearing so much from all the different parties what they're going to do. Yes, training is absolutely critical. Training people to give them an occupation, but training them in the right fields, in the fields where there are shortages, make sure that's where you're trained. You know, it's, again, just getting an education, critical. But, you know, there's so many people out there looking for clerical administration jobs, accounting jobs, legal jobs. But what about all the other types of occupation? The plumbers, the electricians, the builders, all those type of things. So there's no answer, Kathy. Mm-hmm. I'm speechless, because this anonymous caller is just one of so many who are struggling after COVID to get work.
So Brian, what then is the answer? Because it seems to me that we're dealing with a problem that is also largely structural in nature. That it's the forces that are contributing to the problem are not necessarily in the control of you and I to change, but we are just being blown in different directions by these forces within our economy.
Well, government spending is a problem. The fact that we have a twin deficit. We don't import, we don't export as much as we import. We did for a period of time, but with metals prices coming down, we're now importing more. We don't collect enough in taxes, although we did have an overrun in this loss, so sometimes we will. So government needs to borrow. When government borrows money, with global interest rates having risen, government is now borrowing money but having to pay that much more back on interest. So that's a problem. The secret is for government to try and do things, to use the money in growing the economy. And I mean, if you just think about the cases that go to the courts for the amount of money that is used, that could be used for the benefit of the individual. We talk about the Zondo Commission. We talk about the money having left South Africa, state capture and all that. I mean, that was billions, trillions, that could have been used. So, you know, we're there now. But the first priority of the government, of the day who is in power after the 29th of May is to see how can we get the economy back on track? How can we get the economy growing to create jobs for people so they don't run into these problems? So we don't have a 30-year-old saying, I was retrenched at the time, everything was going fine, I was retrenched a bit before COVID and I can't find a job. One of millions, not alone. And it's not that we're insensitive, because you say to me, I talk to people who've got money, but I understand people who don't have money. And you know, so that is the most important thing, to get the economy going, to make business, to make our South Africa a more friendly country to do business, and not to make it so difficult to do business in South Africa.
Brian, we've got a message from Anonymous, and in a moment I'll take the WhatsApp voice notes before we come to the phone line. That's just for my producers. But it's a message from Anonymous who says, from what I've heard about the two-pot system to start in September, it's sad that a maximum of 30,000 rand is what one can access. That amount cannot pay loans and bonds of government employees.
Yes, and just remember that 30,000 rand will be taxed. Mm. It will be added to your income, and so at a high tax rate of 45%, you're not even going to get 17,500. And at a 25% tax rate, you're going to end up getting around about something like 22,500. It, by the way, it was less. There was discussion between the unions and pension funds, and it was agreed to sit at 30,000. Yep, it's 30,000, it's a maximum. Yes, you're quite right. It's not going to go that far. Just remember one thing. You always have the vested pot, which is the amount that you had contributed as at the end of the 31st of August. You still can use that for housing. Mm-hmm. You can still use your withdrawal benefits, which is probably a lot more than the 30, because the 30 is only 10% with a maximum of 30. So if your withdrawal benefit is 300,000, you can borrow 30. If your withdrawal benefit is 200,000, you can only borrow 20. But if your withdrawal benefit is 800, as you say, you can only borrow 30. But you've got that other facility for housing and making use of that. But that's going to have to either come off your fund if you ever leave the company, or you retire, or you get retrenched, or you die. That'll deduct it from the fund. So you've just got to look at that. There are some further benefits other than the two-pot system, which has always been allowable under pension funds for housing.
All right. Thanks for that, Brian. Let's take these voice notes.
Hi, Kathy and Brian. Thanks for the lovely show. You're speaking to Yoni in North Riding. I have a question. I have a two-bedroom apartment that I'm currently renting out, but the rent doesn't cover everything. So the what I'm paying for the bond and the levies and the rates amounts to 10,000 and something, but I could only rent it out for 8,000. So I am moving away next month to another country, and I was planning on renting it out, but I keep thinking maybe I should sell it, but I can't decide. So I was hoping Brian would give me advice as to what to do maybe with it.
I don't know what equity, in other words, what you've got cash in the property, but I can just I can mention one thing, that properties are at the lowest. Can they go lower? You've been hearing many of our callers who are struggling, and the problem is, I always say, the bond costs and all the things that owners of a property need to cover in terms of rent. And remember, you may be getting 8,000 and it may be costing you 10. You know, sometime along the line, you've got to cut your losses. You've got to say, well, I've got some equity. I'm going to take the equity, or I'm going to rely on having to. It's such a difficult one, because, you know, property prices are so low. But I think, you know, if you say you're moving on, you're going to another country, maybe it's time to cut your losses. Sell the property. Yeah, you won't get the price that you could have got 2 or 3 years ago. Properties are standing. You're actually having to give them away at ludicrous prices. prices, what we call bargain basin prices. But yeah, you've got to consider that. Certainly, you know, when will you be able to cover all the expenses? How long? And remember, it's not just rent versus your costs. It's if you lose a tenant and you've got to replace the tenant and you've got to do maintenance and you've got all the hassles. You've got to look at that carefully. But yes, so many people are cutting their losses because renting property is certainly... But although, let me also say this, it's a terrible time. One doesn't want to sell at the worst possible time, and that's what you're doing with property. You're actually selling at the worst possible time.
All right, so if she can hang on to it a little bit longer, yeah, then that's what she must do.
She's got to work out how much is she putting into the property, what is the chance of the property appreciating. I think property is going to take a long time to appreciate. Interest rates are not coming down just yet, and then after they've come down, you know, and there's so much available on the market. You know, a tenant does have no loyalty to the property they live in. They'll move to a property next door if they can get it for less. That's what tenancy is about.
All right. So it sounds like you're just going to have to try and do some of that maths and see, yep, if you were to sell that property right now, how much are you likely to get? Will that at least cover the bond that you've taken out for it? If yes, then maybe it's an easier decision. But if no, how long would you be able to hang on for? All right. Sipho, you're out in East London. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Sipho.
Yes, great show, by the way.
Thank you.
Brian, I think you covered me in your last regarding selling of the property, because I'm a bit in that situation now between deciding to continue with renting it out or selling it outright, because the price is now are so low, and the advice that I got recently was that this is not a selling market in terms of property. So I think you partly covered me. I would like your, maybe now that you've covered me in terms of that one, just to get your comment on this thing of the interest rates. I've read something that is saying there was no need for the Reserve Bank to hike the interest rates. Instead, they could have done another way. So I would like your comment in that part. Do they have to really continue hiking these interest rates? Thank you very much, Brian. I will stop at that.
Well, the Reserve Bank's mandate is to contain inflation. And with inflation moving up to 6 or 7%, in terms of that mandate, whether that mandate's correct or not, and I'm petrified of a whole lot of other economists phoning in, you know, I was of the feel that maybe even though we've got high inflation in South Africa has pushed on us. The petrol price, food prices, transport prices, all pushed on us. It's not as if South Africans are going out and splurging and having the time of their life and in other words, a demand. We weren't demanding products and goods. It's pushed on us. So, but let me go back to what your question is. Yeah, because of the high inflation rates and because of our fear, although inflation rate last week, our numbers did come down from the month before from 5.6 to 5.3. And then our interest rates are governed very much by what's going on internationally. You know, our bond rates now are paying anything. Our 2030 bond is paying around about 11.03%. A 5-year government retail bond is paying 11.25%. Our 30-year bond, government bond, is paying 13.5%. That's what they're paying for people to lend their money. So interest rates are going to stay higher for longer. And American interest rates don't look like they first looked like they were going to be 6 cuts this year, then to 3. Now, all the commentaries I've been reading yesterday talks about 2, and that's why the interest rates, the U.S. Treasury rates have gone up. They were at 3.8, which sounds low compared to South Africa. They're now closer to 4.8, which is substantially higher. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Interest rates, and Kathy summed it up very well. Kathy made the comment, you need to do the numbers. I'm not saying to everyone, go out and sell your property because you're underwater, because you're not connecting enough. Understand, you can write all your costs off against any income. So from a tax point of view, you're tax neutral and you're actually getting a benefit. But, and you've got to ride this out. So Kathy made the point, if you can ride it out, then try and ride it out, understanding all the things that come with it, the hassles I spoke about. If you can't ride it out, and remember, property is about position. Owning a property doesn't mean it's in the right area that will appreciate first. So I'm not advocating just go and sell an investment property. Look at it carefully, do your numbers. Take into account a two-year period. How long will you be funding that property over and above what you're paying in? What is it likely the property to be? What will you likely be able to sell it in 2 years' time? Look at all the numbers before you make that view. But interest rates are going to stay higher for much longer.
All right. Thanks for that, Sipho, out in East London. And I think, Brian, an important point to then probably also talk about, because you were touching on inflation, is the target band for the Reserve Bank, right? What is the target band that they're working on?
The current target band is 3 to 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there has been comment that should be maybe lower. Now, if that's lower, then that puts more pressure on interest rates. If it's a bit higher, if the band was, say, 4 to 7%, then we're right in the middle of that already, and we could consider interest rates. But there's so many other things, factors that go into it. And one of the big factors is what is happening globally.
Mm.
It looks like UK interest rates could start to come down. Japanese rates went up. China, there's also been some adjustment there. And that's why when we read markets reports on a daily basis, we talk about the rand. I mean, we just heard about the rand at 1918. We heard about the oil price at 87. Those two factors tell us what's going to happen with petrol,
mm-hmm.
because the higher the oil price and the lower the value of the rand against the dollar, because we buy oil in dollars, that means we're probably going to be in for a rate hike come the beginning of May.
Oh, don't say it. Yeah. Not another one. You know, I saw somebody posting on X the other day, and this individual says, I used to pay 10,000 rand for my bond. I'm now paying about 18,000 rand for my bond. And they were just complaining about the high cost of living and how they actually can't do it anymore. Because we thought it was just going to be for a period, but that period is turning out to be much longer.
So let me make a comment on that. Your bond costs will come down. I can't tell you when it will come down. Your medical aid cost will keep going up. So on the one hand, if interest rates come down, you get a benefit on the bond, but your medical aid. That's why I talked early on in the program, the dangers of medical aid in 8 and 16 years' time,
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen. You need to carefully look at your whole healthcare program. And that's why we need a universal healthcare system in South Africa. Absolutely. Everyone is entitled to get health services. But at this point in time, you know, the costs and the whole program with NHR is really at the moment not on, simply because there's so many problems that still need to be ironed out.
All right. Let me go to Khojani in Kroonstad. Good morning.
How are you?
Well, thank you, Khojani.
Thank you. I just need advice here. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Khojani.
If a person has a stand, or a person has just bought the full stand and he needs to develop the stand, but he doesn't have money. And then he has a house, fully paid, he doesn't know anything. Would you advise that person to apply for the refinancing of that house to develop this stand to make money? Or what would you advise that person to have another source of money to finance the construction on the new site?
Well, Kanjani, it depends what you intend putting on the stand, and it depends on the viability of the project. You need to do those numbers. If let's say you've got a home and you've got a home worth $1 million and it's got no bond and you're going to borrow $500,000, you need to calculate those costs over the next 5 years. You need to cost the development on the stand, and remember, whatever the price of that development is today, it could be higher because building costs are increasing all the time. So you've got to do those numbers. It's like a business. You're going into a business and you've got to have a business plan. So everyone's circumstance would be different, but a lot of people over the years have been very successful in borrowing on their home and then making the same. But you've got to understand that project is viable and where it is and what it's going to do. And also their time delays. So you need to do those numbers. You need to look at this on a 5 to 10 year project basis to see how it works out. And you can take into account interest rates will come down on your bond. And once you've got that up, you've got to work out what rentals you can get, what the costs are, what agents will be involved in helping you find a tenant. It's a business plan, Kajani. And in many cases over the years, people have been very successful in doing that. The one big advantage is interest rates will come down. And so if you're taking a bond on your property, then fortunately, the cost of your bond will come down. I mean, Kathy was just telling a story about someone paying 10,000 years ago, now paying 18,000. I think we've come to the end of rate tightening, and I think rates will come down. So if you're looking at it over the next 3 to 5 years, do the feasibility, work out what you're going to put on that stand, work out what rental you're going to get after all the costs, and then do the calculation of how much extra the bond is costing you.
If I understand you correctly, if the numbers are good, then you can look for the refinancing.
Yes, absolutely. If the numbers are good, but also, you know, don't be too optimistic about the stand and the property. Be realistic. You know, it's all about being realistic, not be looking at the, you know, South Africans are either super optimists or totally, or the most pessimistic of all. Look at it practically and do the numbers. Yeah.
All right. Khojani, thanks. Let's leave it there. Salumani, good morning.
Morning. Hi, guys. I just have a situation where I can, my calculations show me that in the next 2 years, barring nothing happens, if financially I keep on saving the amount of money I'm saving, in 2 years' time, I will be able to actually reach my balance of the bond and settle my bond. But I'm caught up in a situation where being liquid and settling your bond, like the benefit. I mean, if I save up this amount of money, obviously I would have never had this amount of money in my account ever before. It's an amount that obviously I'll be like, okay, should I, after saving, after so much effort saving this money, and then in a one EFT transaction, there it goes, settling the bond. Does it make sense to settle a bond or just being liquid at the moment?
Salami, let me put this way. Your bond is costing you somewhere between 11 and 12%. I don't know, 0.25% above prime will cost you 12, 0.75% below prime will cost you 11. You're not getting 11% in your money market account. You're getting a lot less. And you've got to pay tax on that interest. So for me, to settle a bond at this point in time makes all sense. One thing you need to know, if you've got an access bond and you put into your bond and you're able to take the money out if you need it for a project or something that could make money for you, then that's an opportunity. But I'm absolutely in agreement to settle bonds at these high rates, because you're not getting these rates after tax on savings you're making.
Yeah, no. Thank you. You settled it for me.
Okay. And congratulations, Salumani. Sounds like you're on the right track, eh? Lots of discipline.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks,
all right. Kevin, you're in Cape Town. Good morning.
Good morning. So I've got a question about UIF. My wife passed away about 2 months ago. She's been working for the company for 11 years. So what happens to that UIF? Can I claim for it or what? Does it just disappear?
Salami, you know, I once said there was a show.
We're talking to Kervin now.
Oh, Kervin, sorry. Yes. Kervin, there was a show on Radio SA, SABC Pro called, you know, The Quiz Kids. And if you stump The Quiz Kids, you got a little accolade. You've stumped me. I don't know the answer. So now what I need to do is, so your wife passed away 2 months ago. She was in she was in employment.
Yes.
And you want to know what the story is. Can our producer please take your phone number down, and I will get I will get the answer for you and call you back during the course of the week.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Kevin. Thanks for that. And of course,
it's nice to get stumped, because you know it's like the lawyers. The lawyers only know, they say, look at all the books in my office, but I only know 10% of what's in those books. But I know where to find it. I've also got the same story.
Okay. As long as you know where to find the answers, Brian.
Yeah.
So a question from Mfuleni, and it goes to your point around the increasing cost of medical aid. I mean, listen to this. He pays 13,500 rand medical aid. 13,500 rand medical aid. But he says that the medical aid only paid 36% of his son's claim, and he now owes 8,000. And he's asking, what are the tax implications of this?
Well, he didn't give me his age, and so if you're under age 65, you don't get many tax benefits. You get what's called a tax credit. If you're over 65, you are able to write off some of those costs. There's a formula, and about 30% of what you pay is paid off. That's the problem with medical aids, by the way. People also need to understand one thing about medical aid. What are your co-payments, and what does the medical aid not have? I had a problem over the Easter weekend. I needed to have a scan. The scan was 15,000 rand. I got a phone call today to say my medical aid only paid 11. I've got to pay 3,600 rand outstanding. Mm. I didn't even know that. It just goes to show, so often tests are done, you don't even know. All I can say is one other tip is most of the medical aids have what's called network doctors. Doctors who are contracted to the medical aid, and you pay medical aid rates. I know it may not be comfortable because so many people have got their doctors they've had for years. But if you know the doctors that are not contracted in to the medical aid, you're paying four to five times the cost of what the medical aid is paying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way you can cut back. I can't help you on that, but other than you've made the point. And then I made the point that your medical aid in 8 to 9 years won't be 13,500. It'll be 27,000.
Sure. It's unthinkable. Another message from Anonymous here. It says, I've been looking after my mother financially since my dad died in 2012. We're 5 siblings, but only my brother, when he can, and I look after her financially. It's getting harder and harder. I don't have enough money to look after my own retirement future because of all the other financial burdens that I have. It's very scary, but what can we do?
Well, the starting point is you are looking after your mother after your father died from 2012. That's 12 years. You were able to. You and your brother, you mentioned your brother, when he could help. You've now got to sit down with your siblings and say, guys, I can no longer do this. And it's tough because the onus can't only be on you. The onus has to be shared, however small it may be. You need that discussion with your siblings. You did what you could while you could, but you can't any longer. It's tough love. You have to do it. What can you do? Because you now jeopardize. Mm. Who's going to look after you when you get to retirement? So you need to look at that.
Okay. All right. Very difficult conversations indeed, right? And sometimes I know that people also live with the guilt of just starting that conversation in the first place. Especially, I think, I don't know if it's any more difficult in black families, Brian.
It's
the same, hey?
You know, Kathy, everyone in South Africa is struggling, no matter who you are, where you are, because people have set a certain standard, and if that standard gets affected, on the concept of stress, the most stressful thing in the barometer is the loss of a child. The second most stressful is losing your job and having to move your family,
sure,
and having to downsize. That is the second most stressful thing on that barometer. So these are difficult issues. Let me quickly give my number. 011-880-4888. 011-880-4888. All your phone numbers, your question, and I'll try and get back to you. If not, I'll get someone from my office to call you.
Bye, Brian. Up next, news.